seated at council table, as the gentlemen are now, and then I'll call your case a second time. The reason I call it the second time is it makes it easier to find it on the recording devices that we are making of these proceedings. That raises another issue, that there may be some sensitive items in your particular case, and I want you to remember that whatever you say is being streamed live across the state on NET, and it's also being preserved permanently for our archives. So govern yourself accordingly. The first case this afternoon is State versus Turner. First case is State versus Turner. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. It pleases the court, counsel. My name is Charles Mazur, and I represent the appellant, representative of the tribe. As is usually the case in a Fourth Amendment issue, this is very fact-specific. And I probably put more time on my facts in this case than I normally do, because to synthesize that, and I may, I would like to reserve 2 minutes. Synthesize it, it's going to be difficult, but I'll do the best. This started as a child abuse hotline tip. Called in, records are not clear whether it was anonymously or whether they actually reported it. I don't think that really matters. The department and law enforcement is bound to investigate when they get those reports, which they did. They approached the residents of the eventual defendant, actually two defendants in this case, you'll be hearing another argument later today. They approached the residents. One day, there was no answer. The door at the street level. Then opened onto a stairway, went upstairs to an apartment. There's only one apartment. No other doors leading from this stairway. The first day there was no response from the street level door. And on the second day, the main investigating officer, man, arrived with Officer Kotwitz. They arrived about 1 p.m. They didn't get an answer at the street level. They opened the door, went up the stairs, and knocked on the door. Top of the stairs. They entered the apartment after they knocked, and they then got permission to enter into the apartment at that point.
So is there anything problematic at that point legally with them knocking on the door at the top of the stairs and then by consent entering the apartment?
I can't find a case law that says that that's a problem. Problems that I have come with.
Okay, so you don't take issue with anything that's occurred so far as you've described it?
No, I don't. They entered the apartment. They then, after some time, they asked for permission to follow up on the report, to check the house to see if there was food, proper sleeping arrangements, things of that nature. Found no problems. That was the initial report. However, they did, when they entered the place, they entered the living room quarters, and they found subsequently a gentleman there who had a warrant for his arrest. He had a backpack. It belonged to him. It didn't belong to the other two, and the officers, I think, eventually decided that the two occupants of the apartment, and they had searched that. They found some drug paraphernalia and I believe a little marijuana in the backpack. They had then done a walkthrough for the sleeping arrangements and the food, general cleanliness. Found nothing. They did not, other than the paraphernalia in the backpack. They found no drug paraphernalia, no paraphernalia around the backpack. They arrested the person who owned the backpack, took him away. They then asked for permission to search. Didn't get permission to search. Eventually, they did obtain consent from one of the parties, not my client, Van and Bond. My client would not consent to the search.
You think it required both parties' consent?
I believe if you don't get consent from one party, the party who consents can't object to the search. I believe that my client didn't consent. I think since he's there, he can object to the search.
Didn't Ms. Bond actually take an officer to a bedroom and present drug paraphernalia and drugs to the officer?
Yes, she did, which she then assumed ownership. She said it was in her nightstand. She had access to it. It might have come from a handbag of hers or something. Yes, she did. The record's clear on that. However, the officers didn't go to get a warrant. They kept threatening to go to the warrant. Prodded to get, at least three or four times, prodded to get permission to search. My client would not consent to the search.
Now, when I was reading that, it seemed to me that the bickering was going on between Ms. Bond and Mr. Turner.
There was quite a bit of disagreement between the two of them. Yes.
And that the officers, all they did was ask them to please make a decision on whether or not they wanted to consent, because if they didn't consent, then they were going to go get a warrant.
That's true. However, this took place over 3 hours. They originally...
Does the record reflect how much time passed from when the officers asked for permission to search and one of the officers left to go get the warrant?
There were several times during the course of contact when they asked for consent. The last time was probably just minutes before Officer Mann left to get the warrant.
Did they ask for consent, or did they ask, have you made up your mind whether or not you're willing to consent?
The record shows that Officer Mann continued to ask for consent. I believe there was one time, though, that somebody did ask, have you made up your mind? And I think it was after that one, when Officer Mann left the premises.
And while she was gone, there was an officer who remained behind?
There was a uniformed officer, full uniform, with his sidearm, standing in the doorway of the living room area.
Does the record reflect that particular officer said anything about consent?
The only thing he said about consent, Your Honor, was when they finally... We clarified that. While they were sitting there, they were still, as the court had already indicated, arguing about whether to consent or not. At some point, Mr. Turner, my client, finally said, okay. And the officer, the only thing he said was he got a hold of Officer Mann and said, I've got consent.
So, and is your position that the officer coerced that from your client?
I think it's not that he physically, he did not verbally... didn't physically confront the people, but as the record reflects, this officer, 6'3", 260 pounds, and in full uniform with his fire.
Are law enforcement allowed to remain at the property to ensure that evidence isn't destroyed while another officer is obtaining a search warrant?
Yeah, absolutely. The problem we have is the period of time. They spent 3 hours trying to get this consent.
Mr. Mazur, let's talk about that 3 hours that you keep asserting. When are you claiming that the seizure began? Because in the beginning, when they came in and they were consensually permitted to enter the apartment to talk with them about the call that they received, there was nothing in the record to indicate they could not have left at any point in time in the beginning. Is there?
Are you saying my client?
Yes.
And he
wasn't seized from the very beginning of the officer coming to the apartment.
You got to remember there were two officers present at that time, and they were in full possession of their firearms at that time as well. Were they told they couldn't leave? No.
Was there anything in the record to indicate they couldn't leave when Mr. Castro was being arrested or while they were waiting for him to be taken care of?
My position is that the circumstances, you got two officers and then the third officer, 6'3", 260, with a firearm, and you're not in a position to get up.
So if you're talking about the time frame when the officer went to get the search warrant and another officer remained behind, how much time are we talking about that they may not have felt like they could leave?
My argument is they didn't feel like they could leave from the time the officer got there.
That might be your argument, but does the record support that?
Well, the record in terms of who was present and the nature of the contact, I think... reports that they weren't able to go. You've got two officers there with firearms, and the third one's there, and he's got his fire.
Because the U.S. Supreme Court has addressed this kind of a detention for up to a 2-hour period of time where clearly a person was not able to leave and have held that was not a violation or a seizure?
Well, it's our position that this is a detention and it was a seizure outside the Fourth Amendment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel?
Good afternoon, Your Honor.
Good afternoon.
May it please the Court, George Love on behalf of the Appellee, the State of Nebraska. I don't think we have much disagreement on the facts in this case. I've outlined a bill of exceptions and as well exhaustively outlined by the district court. He found 109 separate paragraphs or statements of fact related to this particular case. And in at least my review of the record, those facts are supported by the record. So I think we can say that at least as to the first prong on the standard of review, that their findings of fact of the district court are not clearly erroneous by the record. So the issue now boils down to what law applies to those facts or vice versa. I think the issue doesn't turn on the knock on the door, enter, or the time frame, because the time frame in a large part was caused by the two defendants and the fact that officers discovered that Mr. Castro, who was in the apartment, had an arrest warrant out for him, confirmed that, and then arrested him, and it took time for an officer to come and remove him from the apartment, and then the consent to search on the bag, and so on and so forth, and then finally the disagreement between the two defendants, Bond and Turner.
I take it you would disagree with Mr. Mazur that they were seized during that.
Oh, absolutely. I did. I certainly disagree with that. There was no indication.
Where would the state agree that the point of seizure may have occurred?
When they were arrested.
Okay. So
no concession.
Nope.
So that hour or so that they were waiting for the other officer to get the search warrant, your argument is that was not a seizure.
No,
they could have left.
They could have left. That's absolutely correct. In fact, when Officer Mann, first, fairly early in the process, went into the apartment. I believe it was Ms. Bond that asked if they were under arrest, and she said, no, they're not. And then part of this delay was also they did, for lack of, I'm not sure what the word is, but I'll call it a wellness check. They looked in the apartment to make sure that the refrigerator had food and things were orderly and so on. For kids, basically. And having not found that, then the discussion went further after the backpack and the discovery of the methamphetamine and the residue on the pipe and the marijuana and so on and so forth. Discussion goes on and they fight back and forth for a while. And basically, this boils down to an argument of no good deed goes unpunished. Since the officer basically said, asked them to make up their minds whether or not they were going to give consent. And I think she fully understood that both parties would have to consent in order for it to happen. She certainly had probable cause at that point, having searched the backpack and so forth, and especially after Ms. Bond voluntarily turned over contents of her purse to the officer, which were drug paraphernalia.
Did the welfare check activity take place before or after the discovery of this third party who had the arrest warrant?
I remember from the record that I know they noticed the backpack fairly quickly because Castro was there in the apartment, and I think they noticed it fairly quickly. Honestly, Your Honor, I can't say. I want to say the backpack incident occurred and then the wellness check, maybe even simultaneously. I don't know, but I can't represent to the court that one was before the other. Sorry, I just incident. The point that I'm getting at, all of those facts that I think that we agree on, the district court has stated, and so on and so forth. So I think the real argument here is the exterior door, okay? That's the issue. If that is legally sound, what Officer Mann did, and we obviously assert it is legally sound, didn't violate the Fourth Amendment, then the rest of it followed is fairly straightforward. Open the door, come on in. Consent, not consent, arrest, check, admission, working over drug evidence. We're not arguing about those facts.
Well, Mr. Mazur said that he really wasn't challenging that at this point, I believe.
But that's the issue. That's kind of an issue. I don't want to say first impression because there's analogous cases, okay, in Nebraska to that, but we don't have one where you have a second-story apartment enclosed stairwell. The North Dakota case cited by the district court is the closest thing that I found.
Do you think it would be somewhat analogous, as appellant suggested, we consider it as though it were a front porch where there was a door on the porch and then the actual door to the house?
I think the answer is yes, and here's why. Although it was a closed door, the next day in the district court so found, when the officer came back, she finally figured out, wait a minute, this is a business, so any apartment is going to be on the second floor. That's why she opened the door to look to see if that was an exterior door. And I think as the United States Supreme Court in Payton and Florida versus Jardines and just numerous cases has stated, the touchstone here is the reasonableness of the officer. Okay, I don't think the officer had any intention or evil intent to search the residence without consent or a warrant. What she was trying to do is figure out, how do I get to the residence? And her actions, as the district court found, are reasonable. She figured out, wait a minute, this has to be a door away from the apartment on the business. So she opens it, looks, and sees the stairway. Now, that, as other cases have said, analogous to the front porch, and I think the closest case is the North Dakota case cited by district court, that really isn't really an expectation of privacy. And the reason is because it's no more than what any private citizen could do. A salesman could open the door and see and go up and knock, go upstairs and knock on the door. It's no more than any private citizen. So I would posit that the district court's analysis or in applying the facts to the law was correct. That there wasn't a reasonable expectation of privacy that stairwell as its exterior to the apartment.
The only thing that makes it a little bit different is that in a typical apartment setting, for example, there might be a stairwell to multiple units and multiple doors, but this one had just the one, right? That makes it a little bit different from...
Makes it more problematic, yes, Your Honor, in that sense, because you could point to an apartment building or, as you point out, mm-hmm. that's a common area.
Right.
So there definitely is an expectation of privacy in the common area, except for the one case that found the use of a dog sniff, and I can't think of the case, Ortiz, I think it was, dog sniff outside of the apartment door in a commonplace area was a search, okay? But I think that case belongs in the enhancement case. You can't use electronics to see if there's a heat signature on a house. In other words, the police were in the Ortiz case were using an enhancement. The dog, or electronics in other cases.
And it certainly works against an expectation of privacy, doesn't it, when a knock on their actual door is made and the response is, come on in.
Yes.
Right, which is what happened in this case.
Absolutely. In fact, it supports the police officer's reasonableness in opening the exterior, especially since she came back the next day and then figured out, oh, I see. There's apartments upstairs. Interior door. And as the district court also found, while it's true that the state has the burden of proof on warrantless searches, et cetera, and so on and so forth, you know, the higher burden of proof, the defendant has some obligation to show that he had an expectation of privacy in the area, and there was no evidence to the contrary, that it was supposed to be no trespassing, go away, locked door, that sort of thing. There was nothing to indicate the officer that he was being unreasonable in forcing a door, for example, or going past a trespass. We would ask that you affirm the district court's suppression of the, or overruling of the suppression motion in this case. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You.
Let me step back. How much time does the appellant have left? Okay, counsel?
Very briefly, the record shows, it starts at page 77 of the Bill of Exceptions, that the search food and things like that took place prior to the search of the backpack. So the purpose of their presence was extinguished by that time. So I just wanted to point that out to the court, that that was after they had done their work.
Counsel, in your assignments of error, you're asking that all statements be that he made prior to being receiving his warnings pursuant to Miranda should be suppressed. But I had a hard time understanding exactly which statements you're talking about.
I'm not sure there were any statements that were really going to be damaging, because it was when the pockets were emptied, that's when the problems occurred.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Step back. Matter is deemed submitted and counselor excused.
Thank you.
The next matter is In Re Trust of Bressel.